I must make verses of new punishment and offer matter now for canto 20 of this first canticle of the submerged. I was already well prepared to stare below into the depth that was disclosed, where tears of anguished sorrow bathed the ground, and in the valley's circle I saw souls advancing, mute and weeping, at the pace that in our world holy processions take. As I inclined my head still more, I saw that each amazingly appeared contorted between the chin and where the chest begins. They had their faces twisted toward their haunches and found it necessary to walk backward because they could not see ahead of them. Perhaps the force of palsy had so fully distorted some, but that I've yet to see, and I do not believe that that can be. May God so let you, reader, gather fruit from what you read. And now think for yourself how I could ever keep my own face dry when I beheld our image so nearby and so awry that tears down from the eyes bathe their buttocks running down the cleft. Of course I wept, leaning against a rock along that rugged ridge so that my guide told me, "Are you as foolish as the rest? Here pity only lives when it is dead. For who can be more impious than he who links God's judgment to passivity?" Lift your head and see the one for whom the earth was opened while the Thebans watched, so that they all cried, "Amphiaraus, where are you rushing? Have you quit the fight?" Nor did he interrupt his downward plunge to Minos, who lays hands on every sinner. See how he's made a chest out of his shoulders, and since he wanted so to see ahead, he looks behind and walks a backward path. And see Tiresias, who changed his mien when from a man he turned into a woman, so totally transforming all his limbs that when he had to strike once more upon the two intertwining serpents with his wand before he had his manly plumes again. And Aruns is the one who backs against the belly of Tiresias. Aruns, who in Luni's hills, tilled by the Carrarese who live below, had as his home a cave among white marbles from which he could gaze at stars and sea with unimpeded view. And she who covers up her breasts, which you can't see, with her disheveled locks, who keeps all of her hairy parts to the far side, was Manto, who had searched through many lands, then settled in the place where I was born. On this, I'd have you hear me all while. When Manto's father took his leave of life and Bacchus' city found itself enslaved, she wandered through the world for many years. High up in lovely Italy, beneath the Alps that shut in Germany above to Rolo, lies a lake known as Benaco. A thousand springs and more, I think, must flow out of the waters of that lake to bathe Panino, Garda, Valcamonica. And at its middle is a place where three, the bishops of Verona, Brescia, Trento, may bless if they should chance to come that way. Hesgier, strong and handsome fortress, built to face the Brescians and the Bergamasks, stands where the circling shore is at its lowest. There all the waters that cannot be held within the bosom of Benaco fall to form a river running through green meadows. No sooner has that stream begun to flow than it is called Mincio, not Benaco, until Governolo, where it joins the Po. It's not flowed far before it finds flat land, and there it stretches out to form a fen that in the summer can at times be fetid. And when she passed that way, the savage virgin saw land along the middle of the swamp, untilled and stripped of its inhabitants. And there, to flee all human intercourse, she halted with her slaves to ply her arts. And there she lived. There left her empty body. And afterward, the people of those parts collected at that place because the marsh, surrounding it on all sides, made it strong. They built a city over her dead bones. And after her who first had picked that spot, they called it Mantua. They cast no lots. There once were far more people in its walls before the foolishness of Casa Lodi was tricked by the deceit of Pinamonte. Therefore, I charge you, if you ever hear a different tale of my town's origin, do not let any falsehood gull the truth. And I, O Master, that which you have spoken convinces me, and so compels my trust that others' words would only be spent coals. But tell me, if among the passing souls you see some spirit worthy of our notice, because my mind is bent on that alone. Then he said to me, that shade who spreads his beard down from his cheeks across his swarthy shoulders, when Greece had been so empty of its males that hardly any cradle held a son, he was an augur, and at Aulis he and Calchas set the time to cut the cables. His name's Eurypylus. A certain passage of my high tragedy has sung it so. You know that well enough, who know the whole. That other there, his flanks extremely spare, was Michael Scott, a man who certainly knew how the game of magic fraud was played. See there Guido Bonatti, see Asdente, who now would wish he had attended to his cord and leather, but repents too late. See those sad women who had let their needle, shuttle, and spindle to become diviners. They cast their spells with herbs and effigies. But let us go. Cain, with his thorns already, is at the border of both hemispheres, and there, below Seville, touches the sea. Last night the moon was at its full. You should be well aware of this, for there were times when it did you no harm in the deep wood. These were his words to me. Meanwhile, we journey.
Quell'altro che ne fianche e cose poco. Michele scolto fu, che veramente della magiche frode sape le gioco. Veri guiro panate, veri astente, che avere inteso al cuoio e allo spago ora vorrebbe matare si pente. Veri le trisse che la schiaron l'ago, la scuola e il fosso e fecersi fecer male con erbe e con i mago. Ma viene ormai che già tiene il confine de amendue le emispere e tocca la onda sotto sobiria caino e le spine. E già ir notte fu la luna tonda. Ben tende ricordar che non ti nocque alcuna volta per la selva fonda. Si mi parlava e andavamo in troque.